T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Well, I want to thank the president. He called my producers and said, how can we time this out so it'd be most convenient for your show? And the answer is right now, because he is about to take the podium with the Turkish president, Erdogan, and we're going to hear some comments. Now, you know, just as a warning here, it's a little unclear, as I mentioned before, the top of the hour, sometimes how these things go down. He could stick to the script. There could be some foreign policy questions about American-Turkish relations. I'm sure that some reporters will ask those questions because that's sort of the point of the news conference. But since we have historic impeachment hearings that are going on today, in fact, Adam Schiff, who's the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, is still holding a, if you would call it, a post-game news conference. And I saw Jim Jordan on there as well. But the president being introduced with President Erdogan right now, stepping up to the podium. Well, the cameras are clicking away.
Thank you very much.
There's President Trump.
Please. I want to begin by welcoming the First Lady with us today and the First Lady of Turkey. Thank you very much for being here. This is a great honor to have you. And we had a wonderful and very productive meeting. Before we start, I would like to thank President Erdogan for releasing detainee Serkan Golge, who was in detention and different forms of detention. And I appreciate that very much. That was a very nice tribute. And he'll be coming back at some point in the not too distant future. So that's very good news for the United States and also very good news for Turkey. Turkey, as everyone knows, is a great NATO ally and a strategic partner of the United States around the world. Our economic relationship has tremendous potential and continues to expand and to grow. Direct engagement and diplomacy between our nations are essential to ensuring a future of peace and prosperity and promise for our citizens. Over the course of the day, President Erdogan and I had a frank and productive conversation on a range of very important topics. Among those topics we discussed was the situation in Syria. Last month, I sent Vice President Pence, Secretary of State Pompeo is with us, National Security Advisor O'Brien, thank you, to meet with President Erdogan in the hopes of ending all of the hostilities. The negotiations were very successful, and the United States and Turkey achieved a tremendous amount on that day, and I think we're working toward getting it better and better. It's a complicated situation. It's been going on for hundreds of years. Today, the ceasefire continues to hold, and I want to thank the President for his partnership and cooperation as we work to build a more stable and peaceful and prosperous Middle East. We've assured each other that Turkey will continue to uphold what it's supposed to uphold. I'm a big fan of the President, I have to tell you that. And I know that the ceasefire, while complicated, is moving forward and moving forward at a very rapid clip. There's a lot of people that want to see that work after so many decades and so many centuries, you might say. The United States and Turkey are working extensively on many other security issues. Turkey has the second largest armed forces in NATO after the United States, and they're a very strong second, I might add. And I'm pleased that Turkey has been steadily increasing its defense spending and is very close to the 2% of GDP range, unlike many of the other countries. At this moment, there are 8 out of the 28 countries that are current in terms of their obligation financially. Turkey has made a vital contribution to NATO's resolute support mission in Afghanistan, And his partnership was important to our destruction of the ISIS caliphate. In fact, just recently when we took out al-Baghdadi and take him out, we did. Turkey knew that we were going over certain areas. They were very, very helpful. We appreciate that very much. Good for both countries. We really appreciate it. We're grateful to President Erdogan and to the citizens of Turkey for their cooperation in the constant struggle against terrorism. He fights it like we do. Key to our security collaboration is our trade, defense, and military equipment program. American foreign military sales to Turkey total many billions of dollars, and Turkey supplies component parts to many American defense programs. They make parts of the frame, as an example, for the F-35. Turkey's acquisition of sophisticated Russian military equipment, such as the S-400, creates some very serious challenges for us, and we are talking about it constantly. We talked about it today. We're talking about it in the future. Hopefully, we'll be able to resolve that situation. We've asked our Secretary of State and Minister of Foreign Affairs and our respective national security advisors to immediately work on resolving the S-400 issue. We've also recently agreed to work toward a $100 billion two-way trade agreement. Secretary Ross is here, and I think we've made tremendous progress in that. We have a lot of trade with Turkey, but it could be many times larger, and Turkey would like to see that. And it would also be good for the United States. So we intend to bring it up to about $100 billion. That would be four times what it is right now. Our goal is to expand commerce between the United States and Turkey, reduce our trade deficit, and ensure a truly fair and reciprocal relationship. We are, just for those of you that have any interest, we discussed it today also. Our trade agreement with China is moving along very rapidly. We'll see what happens, but it's moving along rapidly. China wants to make a deal, that I can tell you. One of my chief priorities as president has been removing the barriers to American trade and investment and ending the illicit practices that harm our workers. We encourage Turkey to further open its markets, and they are doing that. They are doing that very much. Toward American goods and American services, our markets are open. Turkey is opening up their markets, and they're opening up rapidly.
Well, this is kind of what I was warning you about before the president took the podium, because I don't know that most of you want to hear about the relationships with Turkey. I think people want to hear about impeachment. It's interesting because Adam Schiff was just on doing his post-game wrap-up. Jim Jordan was on before that. CNN did not even cut to the president. CBS Main, because this was aired, even Fox Main, what I mean by Fox, you know, Channel 2, not just Fox News, they aired the impeachment hearings. So did CBS. I'm assuming NBC did, too. I only have three TVs in here. But on CBS Main right now, they have the president on Turkish relations. There's a reason for that. They think he's going to talk about impeachment. What happens, you've seen it before. We've aired these before. He's talking with a president, a diplomat, another leader. Then questions start coming in about other topics. So we're going to take a break. I cannot guarantee he's going to get into that particular subject, but my guess is he will, only because politically, he's going to want a moment today that basically takes the headlines away from Adam Schiff. That is at least my guess. He's shaking hands with President Erdogan, and he's going to say some things. So this will be our time to take a break here. We'll come back. We'll kind of make a judgment call and see where they are right now, because I think people want to hear his reaction to the hearings today. And hopefully we'll be able to bring those to you next on KMOX.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
When you're out of my sight, you must constantly Twitter me exactly what you're up to.
Follow Mark on Twitter at Mark Reardon, KMOX.
I'm guessing there's maybe like nobody out there that really wants to hear the breakdown of Turkish-American relations in this news conference. So having said, man, maybe there's one person out there, I don't know, like a great-great-grandson or something of President Erdogan's grandfather, who knows? The point is there's no impeachment talk that's being discussed yet in this news conference. When there is, we're going to go to it or roll it back, flip it back right away. So we're calling some audibles and trying to keep on top of this afternoon. I do want to talk to Mike Claiborne at some point, either in the next segment or 4:20 this afternoon, about Mike Schilt. Mike Schilt was on with Chris Raby last night. We have some audio from that. Waino re-signs. The Astros accused of sign stealing before the 2017 World Series. So get Mike's thoughts on that as we get through the afternoon here. For those of you, and I'm guessing most of you have heard the Illinois Real ID ads, which are, I think, a little confusing if you don't know what's going on. And I'll just say, I don't know what's going on. So I've heard about Real ID. We've reported on Real ID. Are you going to need a Real ID to fly or a passport? Sounds like it. Is just this in Illinois or Missouri? Or how did the Missouri legislature solve this? Because I know they were going to work on this a couple of years ago, and I thought that they had solved it. So the bottom line is, I don't know what's going to happen when you have to travel next year. And Joseph Plagenberg is the division director of the Missouri Motor Vehicle and Driver License Bureau. Joseph, thanks for coming on here and maybe clearing up some of the questions. How are you?
Doing good, Mark. How about yourself?
All right, I'm good. So I just got recently a new driver's license because mine had expired. I think it was like in June or something like that. So maybe May. So does that mean that I have Real ID and I don't have it with me right now? It's in the other room, so I can't look. There's like some indication on the license itself, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So in the top right corner, there are two different indicia that tell you whether you have a Real ID or non-Real ID compliant. If you have the Real ID compliant, in the top right corner, there'll be a star. There's a gold edging around it, but then there's a star. And if it's a non-compliant driver license, what it'll say, it'll actually say not for Real ID purposes.
So would your, and I should probably go grab this because it's just sitting on my desk, but if I got the license in May or if someone renewed this year, could they assume that it is Real ID or could they maybe perhaps not? I don't know.
Well, in the normal process, we began the Real ID program here in Missouri on March 25th of this year. So anytime thereafter, when an individual goes in to renew or they want to obtain a duplicate that is Real ID compliant, or maybe they're the 16-year-old Jimmy getting their license for the first time,
right?
The clerk should ask you, you know, are you interested in a Real ID or a non-Real ID compliant driver license or non-driver license? And so that's where the person, you know, a lot of times we're seeing there needs to be a colloquy that goes on, you know, well, what is Real ID? It prompts a lot of questions, and basically the only difference with them is with a Real ID compliant document, you know, you'll be able to, on October 1st, 2020, to enter federal facilities, fly domestically, enter military bases, that kind of thing. With the non-compliant, it does everything else that it did before. So you're valid to drive. You can use it for voting purposes, age verification in the grocery store, that kind of stuff.
But if you are trying to fly next year and you don't have that or you don't have a passport, that's where you get into trouble, right?
Yes. October 1st, 2020 is the enforcement date for the Department of Homeland Security for the Real ID Act. Yeah.
Because I think that, and there was actually a story that reminded me of this. I've been hearing these ads about Illinois. Is Illinois different than Missouri? Let me ask that question. Do they have different requirements or is it the same thing?
Well, there are standards set across all jurisdictions that are deemed Real ID compliant that are set by federal regulations. And the gist of it is that all jurisdictions have to require proof of identity, proof of lawful status, proof of Social Security number, and then proof of residency, and then any name change documents if an individual changed their name over the course of their life. That's standard across the board. And you need to provide proof in the form of documents, obviously, for each of those. And each one has to have one document except for proof of residency where you need two documents.
And I don't know if I'm even more confused than ever or not. So I grabbed my producers grabbed my license. I think they pilfered through my wallet and took some money too, but that's okay. A finder's fee. And I'm telling you right now, my recollection is that they did not ask me if I wanted Real ID or not. I don't remember that question coming up. And it does in fact say not for Real ID purposes. So at this point, next year, I cannot fly with this license. But if I have a passport, I can use that. But the confusion then becomes, look, we don't want to, if we're not going to Mexico or overseas, we probably don't want to use our passport. We can just use our license. This means I have to go back and get the Real ID if I want to do it that way?
Yeah, on October 1st, 2020, in order to fly domestically or go to the federal facilities, you will need a Real ID compliant or the passport or other acceptable federal document. That said, if you do want to go in and get a Real ID compliant, in the state of Missouri, this is a bit different from Illinois and other jurisdictions that actually have charged people a fee to obtain Real ID. In Missouri, to get your duplicate, we don't charge any licensing fee for that process. So if you go in with the documents that you need to obtain the Real ID, they will waive the licensing fee. Now, I say that, but there is a processing fee that will still apply, and that's for our independent contractors that run the license offices across the state.
Yeah, because that's because this is me, not you, Joe. You don't have to kind of get involved. That's because we have this ridiculous licensing project and process where everyone has franchises. That's just my opinion. I think it's unbelievably strange, but that's what we have in Missouri. So just to back up a little bit, I know you already told me this because I want to make sure that people understand, because I'm guessing that people have grabbed their licenses too and they've looked at this and said, okay, not for real ID purposes. The documents, if I want to go in, I have to pay the processing fee. If I want to make sure I'm real ID compliant, what do I need to bring with me?
Okay. So two things I had mentioned previously are lawful status and identity. A lot of times this is the same, one and the same document. It can be a passport. It can be a birth certificate. It can be a U.S. birth abroad certificate of naturalization. There's a myriad of different documents. Okay. If you're a non-citizen, there's a lot of other documents. But basically, most people bring in a birth certificate or a passport for that.
But that would be all I would need is just the passport if I have it?
Yes, to prove identity and lawful status, you're good to go with a passport.
So that would be pretty easy. If you want to simplify it, you want to make sure, because, I don't know how most people do it, but I tend to try to keep my passport under lock and key to a certain extent, unless I'm traveling internationally, because I want to make sure that I have it at that point. If you travel with it domestically all the time, which is certainly a possibility, you might risk losing it a little bit more, and that would be my personal reason.
Right. Next thing you would need, Social Security number proof. And obviously you can bring in Social Security card, you can bring in a W-2 form, you can bring in SSA 1099 form, any of those documents to prove your Social Security number. Social Security cards can't be laminated. A lot of individuals have, to preserve their card, chosen to laminate them, but Social Security Administration says that invalidates the card, and so we can't accept that.
I got you, and I'm gonna. You know what? You got it all in, Joe. But I've got to go to the president right now. But I think that helped a lot, so I appreciate it.
Gotcha.
And I think we're gonna probably remind people of this because, look, there's questions. You hear the ads; it's a little confusing, and I want to make sure people know what they're doing. So I appreciate you coming on here this afternoon.
Not a problem, Mark. Have a good afternoon.
Take care, and thanks for being flexible too. And we have the president right now, and he is talking about impeachment. This is in this media availability at the White House with the president of Turkey.
And he wrote something that was much different than the fact. I want to find out why the IG, why would he have presented that when, in fact, all he had to do is check the call itself and he would have seen it. I'm going to be releasing, I think, on Thursday, a second call, which actually was the first of the two. And you'll make a determination as to what you think there. But I've heard just a report. They said it's all third-hand information, nothing direct at all. It can't be direct because I never said it. And all they have to do is look very, very simply at the transcript. If you read the transcript, this was analyzed by great lawyers. This was analyzed by Greg Jarrett. It was analyzed by Mark Levin. It was analyzed by everybody. They said this statement that I made, the whole call that I made with the president of Ukraine, was a perfect one. So that this country gets put through that we have to waste this gentleman's time by even thinking about it, talking about it. I'd much rather focus on peace in the Middle East. And I hear that it's a hoax and it's being played as a hoax. That's what I hear, but you'll have to tell me. Go ahead.
Then, if I may, on Syria and peace in the Middle East, President Erdogan talked about repatriating Syrian refugees back to their homeland. Have you had those discussions with European leaders, since there are so many Syrian refugees?
Well, no, I think that, frankly, Europe should be paying for this to a large extent. As of this moment, Turkey's been paying for most of it. I think the president was saying today they've spent over $40 billion on the cost of that. $40 billion. How much?
$30 million.
40. That's what I said. Whatever. He spent a lot, okay? They're throwing out all these different numbers. I heard it was $40 billion. How is that? $40 billion, correct? So $40 billion. And I've heard that number from others, and that's a lot. Europe has contributed about three, a lot of these people would go all throughout Europe. I mean, it would be a devastating situation for Europe because he's got 4 million people. He has a lot of Kurds, too, that they're helping and taking care of. So I have spoken to Europe about it. I think they should help us with ISIS because many of them left France and they left Germany and they left UK. They left different countries. And these countries should help us, because if they ever did get released, which we won't be doing, but if they ever did get released, that's where they want to go. They want to go back to France and Germany and UK and all of those other countries that are not helping us. I gave them the option, would you like to have them back? And intelligently, they said, no, thank you. But that's not right and it's not fair. I can tell you also that Turkey captured when some escaped during the conflict, when they had the heavy shooting. And I mean, I think I know how they happened to escape, but it's one of those things. Doesn't matter, because Turkey captured everybody that escaped, plus an additional group. When we took over, when I became president, ISIS was rampant all over the Middle East. And as of about a month ago, I think, Lindsay, we can say that we have now 100% of the caliphate. And they'll always try and grow, but they haven't been able to do that. And what we did last week with al-Baghdadi, who is the absolute founder, leader, set them back. We also got his number two, and we have our sights on his number three. So they're not going to be growing too fast. But I will say Turkey's been helping us a lot.
So with that, I also have a question for President Erdogan. With the what you're calling a realignment along the northern Syria border.
Okay, so, you know, and I said this all along this afternoon. I just wasn't sure where this thing was going to head. There are questions, and there were questions, a couple about impeachment, and the president said a couple of things there and talked about releasing this call tomorrow, but now they're back to Turkish-American relations. Should we have something that relates back to impeachment? We're going to pass that along as soon as we can here this afternoon. We'll take a break. I think Carol will have the news in just a moment.
Hey, Cardinals fans, your spot for everything Redbirds this offseason is KMOX. From the hot stove show to the winter meetings in San Diego to winter warm-up at Cardinal Caravan, then 2020 spring training in Jupiter. Your home for everything Cardinals is KMOX.
And speaking of the Cardinals, although I'm sure he's going to want to offer in-depth analysis of impeachment, Mike Claiborne this afternoon. You want to break this all down, these hearings? Because I know you were watching.
Yeah, I was watching. You know, you know what? It's like watching the proverbial, you know, train wreck.
Yeah.
Where once you start, you can't stop. And I've never seen a situation where two sides can vehemently agree to disagree, and how each side's spin on this situation is just so diametrically different than the other guy.
There's a lot of spin. You know, and here's what I've said before, and I think you saw this even with Bill Clinton, before we get into Cardinal stuff, and I do want to talk about that. I have a particular opinion on issues. You do. Everybody does. I don't see why you couldn't have good grouping of Democrats that see things the way that the majority of Republicans see it right now. By the same token, why couldn't you have some Republicans, and I know the answer, this is rhetorical, Mike, say, hey, we have some issues with this as well, but it's all... they're playing for their team, and there's nobody that's going to be in the middle and say, okay, we have legitimate issues. I've said from the beginning, I think there's legitimate issues here. I do not think it's an impeachable offense, but I guess that's what this is all about.
You know me well enough to know I'm a kind of a middle guy, and I just roll my eyes each time I see the extremes from both sides take over. And that's the unfortunate thing, that there's no middle ground. I mean, either you're in or you're not, and that's not how this thing should really
be. So let me just say this, and we'll go to Cardinals. The president of the United States just cited Mark Levin in a news conference. I'm just going to say, right, I'm going to go on the record as saying that's an impeachable offense.
You know what? I saw that, and I almost went like Fred Sanford. Elizabeth, I'm about to join you on that. I almost grabbed my chest when I heard that.
Look, there are people, there are legitimate conservatives and people who are, you know, deep thinkers and philosophers, if you will, and Mark Levin is not one of them. Let's go into the Cardinals before I get myself into more trouble here. Mike Schill, I didn't think it was going to happen, Mike Claiborne. I didn't think he would get it. He deserved it, but I didn't think the writers would give it to him.
I told him, I guess like the last road trip that we were on, I said to him, I said, you know, when we win this thing, you're going to end up being manager of the year. And he just kind of looked at me like, you really thinking far ahead here. I said, well, we're going to win. And because of what you've done, I'm going to find it hard for them not to give it to you. And my logic was this. A, Brian Snitker had won it the year before, and it's hard to do it back to back. B, if you win a division, that means you beat Milwaukee, which means Craig Council will be finishing in second place.
Exactly.
Hence the fact that Mike Schilt won it and won it deservingly.
I guess in Davey Martinez really wasn't even in the top three, right?
No, but you remember, they vote on what you did
before,
in the regular season.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
So that's why he didn't get more consideration. So, and that's why winning the division and considering how he won it and where the Cardinals had come from statistically made Mike Schilt the likely candidate.
You know, Mike Schilt is a very humble guy. You know him pretty well. I would still have to say this has to mean a lot to him.
Oh, I agree, Mark. But I think what it means a lot to sports, where a person who didn't play the game as a professional, didn't play it in college very much, finds himself being the manager of the year. Now, think about that. This is a sport, especially baseball, where people will say, well, you didn't play, so what do you know? And you hear that said so much, all right, he didn't play, and apparently he knew a lot more. And because he worked hard, he was a student of the game, he gave his players and coaches a chance to do their jobs, and he just did an outstanding job in tempering his own ambitions and making sure the team came first.
Look, that is exclusive company when you talk about Whitey Herzog, Tony La Russa, Mike Schilt as that trifecta for Cardinals winners of Manager of the Year.
Oh, you're right. And, you know, Tony's had a lot of influence on Mike Schilt. And I think it's kind of a part of Tony's manager tree, so to say. And I know Whitey and Mike Schilt have had some great conversations. So, you know, it's just really what Cardinal Nation is all about. You know, these guys came through Cardinal Nation, and they were willing to spread their knowledge. And both managers, Tony and Mighty, won differently. But Mike Schilt was such a good listener, along with having George Kissel in his life. I don't know if it'll ever get any better than that.
So the president and impeachment sort of put a little bit of a dent into our time here this afternoon, but I really want to get your opinion on the story that broke yesterday about the Astros and the sign stealing from 2017. You know, on the one hand, you've had this be a part of baseball forever, sign stealing. This is a little different here. How big of an issue is this? Because based on what some people have said at this point, it doesn't look like this is just conjecture.
Oh, no. The whisper campaign about not only the Astros cheating, but some other teams here recently has something that's gone on throughout baseball. And you have two trains of thought. Well, it is what it is. If you ain't trying, you ain't cheating. Or, wait a minute, we better look in our own house to make sure we don't cry foul too loud because somebody can come after us. And I think that, you know, Mike Fiers basically put a cap on it. He was the first guy to come forward and say, this is what happened on my watch. But I think as far as the Astros were concerned, there were a lot of people who were raising an eyebrow to some things that were going on. And there's some other teams that, you know, when you go into a ballpark, you know, you have to say, well, wait a minute, something's different here. And it's no coincidence, Mark, if you go to a ballpark and you're on the road, that everybody's on the top step, and especially pitchers who aren't involved in the game, starting pitchers, that are looking around to see if somebody's flashing signs or looking to see how people are placed in the stands. You know, you always are on guard for signs being stolen. And that's why I know different teams change up their signs virtually every road trip because they always feel somebody's trying to cheat.
So in this circumstance, the story that came out yesterday says that you had a camera in the outfield and they had a monitor in the tunnel between the dugout and the clubhouse. And then there was a noise on basically a trash can that they would bang depending on what the pitch call was. If this is all borne out in an investigation, what are the repercussions?
Great question, and I don't know because, let's face it, everybody in baseball has known how cheating works,
yeah,
okay?
Exactly.
So how you prove it publicly, I think there's a lot of evidence here to prove the point with Houston, but I don't know what baseball does about it. I mean, because it's such a heinous crime. Because, you know, one of the things on why people are upset, because somebody could get hurt. You know, a player could get hurt, you know, where he's probably playing in too close and a line drive can take him out. Or if you get caught cheating, maybe a pitcher starts throwing at the hitters. So there are a lot of other repercussions that come with it that people have to take into account that makes this a very volatile and dangerous situation for everyone. And if baseball doesn't step in and do something about it, I mean, on a major level, then I think you're opening up a bigger Pandora's box that I'm not sure we can control.
That's interesting. I left myself just a couple of minutes here. We got to talk about Adam Wainwright. I've said this many times. I was in the group of Cardinal Nation fans that thought that that was a mistake even last year, that Wainwright would come in and blow games, give up a bunch of runs in the first inning like he had in the past few previous years. But I was very wrong. I apologize to Adam Wainwright. He earned this extension. I love that once again, it's incentive laden. That's the way to do it.
Well, you know, it's old school. That's how it used to be. And, you know, to be honest with you, Mark, I thought, boy, Adam Wainwright's best outing was his last one in Washington when the Cardinals were hemorrhaging. And here's a guy coming in on short rest saying, I'll take it on. And he stopped the bleeding long enough for the Cardinals to climb back in that game. They obviously didn't come all the way back. But I thought his effort was just so commendable that I even said something to him afterwards, because he left it all on the table. He didn't spare anything, and he was the first guy to volunteer to go out there and save that bullpen to the point where the Cardinals had a chance to try and climb back in the ballgame. I don't know where it goes next year. I'm just glad to have his leadership and his professional experience on the ball club. And let's just keep our fingers crossed he can stay healthy and make a contribution like he did this year.
Yeah, and you have to, you know, you can hear the sincerity in his voice when he said, look, if the elbow was flaring up or if I felt something that wasn't wrong, he would have been very prepared to say, okay, we're going into the next phase, whatever that might be. I don't think this guy's going to leave baseball. I would expect that he's going to be maybe a skipper someday. He seems to have those abilities maybe.
I think it's important for him to stay in the baseball. Now, what I think may happen, maybe he takes a year or two away to spend time with his family. He's got a family of girls, one boy, and that's important. But to have Adam Wainwright involved in the organization is paramount because of what he's meant to so many guys in that dugout, in the bullpen, in the clubhouse. Those guys just don't exist. There's no tree in the backyard that has a bunch of Adam Wainwrights hanging off of it. And when you have one in your organization, man, you know, he's even more important to you well after he's thrown his last pitch.
All right, Klebs, we will look for more in-depth impeachment analysis and baseball talk in the very near future from you. I appreciate it.
Well, we got to talk right before the weekend is up because he comes back on Sunday.
I did not see. I skipped last
Ray
season.
Donovan,
I skipped last
Sunday.
Season, Mike.
Well, you better get on a binge watch because you definitely want to watch last season. I thought it was one of the best seasons.
We love Ray Donovan. I'm going to take it under advisement. Mike Claiborne with us this afternoon. We love that show on Showtime. But I did kind of give it up a couple of years ago. I had to get back into it. 3:48.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the Day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store. Pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. Long, long impeachment inquiry hearing today. And I don't know that we learned anything. Both sides went at it. There are big divisions. These are the closing statements from both sides. Devin Nunes is the minority ranking member on the Intelligence Committee.
I want to reiterate what I said earlier, and that is that we really should stop holding these hearings until we get the answer to three important topics. The first being the full extent of the Democrats' prior coordination with the whistleblower and who did the whistleblower coordinate with. Second, the full extent of Ukraine's election meddling against the Trump campaign. And third, why did Burisma hire Hunter Biden and what did he do for them? And did his position affect any government actions, U.S. government actions under the Obama administration? You are not allowing those witnesses to appear before the committee, which I think is a problem. So we'll expect, hopefully, you will allow us to bring in the whistleblower, the folks that he spoke to, and also numerous Democratic operatives who worked with Ukraine to meddle in the election.
So that's Devin Nunes. This is Adam Schiff, the Intelligence Committee chair.
At the end of the day, we're going to have to decide based on the evidence that you and others provide whether we're prepared to accept in the presence of the United States a situation where the president, for their own personal or political benefit, can condition military aid, diplomatic meetings, or any other performance of an official act in order to get help in their reelection. Whether we will need to accept in this president or any future president the idea that the president of the United States could invite a foreign country to intervene in our affairs. These are the decisions we will have to make when we have to decide whether this president should be impeached. But I want to thank you again. Just conclude by saying, because I can't let it go unanswered, Some of my colleagues made the statement repeatedly that I've met with the whistleblower, that I know who the whistleblower is. It was false the first time they said it. It was false the second through 40th time they said it. It will be false the last time they say it.
Now, that's confusing to me because I know who the whistleblower is, and I think many of you do as well. The biggest mystery out of all this today, and this is actually a true story, why did Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who's from California, have a paperclip in her hair? That was circulating around Twitter. I really want to know the answer to that question. Total Information PM is coming up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.